All right, welcome into the Fan pregame on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Ailish and Justin for the next hour. We are quickly approaching the NHL trade deadline. We've got some trades that happened earlier in the day, and we're holding on hope that we'll get some live ones too.
Yeah, some nice pace to this week. We get like one trade per day to like really sink our teeth into. Maybe that can increase a little bit tomorrow. But yeah, we're easing into things here. And yeah, lots to unpack with that big Lightning deal executed with the Seattle Kraken. So we'll get into that.
Okay, we'll talk to Frank Saravalli in a couple minutes, maybe even seconds. And Dan Shulman will join us around 6:30. We're going to take a slight detour from hockey just for one segment, folks, because this week has been hockey, hockey, hockey. We want to check in with Dan on where the Blue Jays are at. Spring training just flying by. So Dan at 6:30, and maybe a little college hoops with him too.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
Okay. Let's kick things off with Frank Saravalli, president of hockey content at Daily Faceoff. Frank, how are you?
I'm hanging in. I'm surviving. Let's go. We're less than 48 hours away. I'm seeing the finish line in sight.
Okay. We apparently have something to tee up for you. So welcome to the return of Frank or Fiction.
It's time for Frank or Fiction.
I don't know that I embrace it or I'm afraid of it. I guess I'm just here.
Oh, that's so good. So okay. So shout out to Andrew Holland, who made that literally 30 minutes ago.
Yeah, that was done slightly in haste.
And he said that he didn't like it, but I like it.
I'm all for it.
Could you hear it?
Let's go. I'm in.
You could hear it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, if you have any suggestions, like if you want a beat to it, like I made for Elliot's 32 thoughts comments, we can upgrade. But I like it a lot. So, Frank or Fiction, we're here. Where should we start? You want to go?
I
haven't even looked ahead of what we're going to ask
you. A little bit by the music, but we're ready to go. Big news with Jack Hughes.
Oh, yes.
Out for the season, of course, the New Jersey Devils. So, Frank or Fiction, then Frank. The Devils should switch to maybe a bit of a soft sell.
That's Frank. Well, I jumped the gun. Soft sell, I think that's fiction.
Okay.
I don't know how much there is to sell, but I do think what they should adjust to, what is Frank, is that they should adjust to a less aggressive buyer posture than they had maybe a week or 10 days ago. After Four Nations, I had significant concerns about Hughes and his ability anyway to be the forefront, the leading edge of a team pushing for a Stanley Cup. And then you look at the New Jersey Devils play largely since Christmas, and they're only a couple points up on the Rangers and the Blue Jackets and the Red Wings. They don't have that firm of a grasp on their playoff spot. And so when I look at all those things together, I say, this is a team that for all the strides that they made in the offseason, they finally solved their goaltending, a lot to be excited about in the future. They just aren't there quite yet, and I don't see them barking with the big dogs in the East, so maybe a year to keep your powder dry.
Okay, big dogs in the East, you teed me up. Frank or Fiction, Tampa and Florida's additions puts the Maple Leafs and Brad Tree Living in the hot seat.
The hot seat, I'm going to say fiction,
wow.
But it certainly places an increased onus on them to improve this team. That's Frank. So look, Brad Tree Living's only a couple years into his tenure as GM, so not anywhere near a hot seat.
Sorry, I didn't mean like his job's in the hot seat. I mean like the Leafs, like they better get grooving, the seat's hot, go make moves.
48-hour hot
seat. I could see that.
Okay.
I also think so much of it though is dependent on the market. And I don't know about you, but I'm looking at my trade targets board, and if I'm the Toronto Maple Leafs, like I don't know how thrilled I am about what I'm seeing. Because I think Yanni Gourde is one thing, and I thought he would have been a fantastic fit for the Leafs. In fact, when I wrote my story earlier today before the trade, I listed Yanni Gourde as the ideal fit for the Leafs. But now that that's not the case, and he's moved on to Tampa, I do think that there's been a significant shift in the balance of power, not just in the East, but specifically within the Atlantic Division, that I think it shouldn't cause the Leafs to act, but it should at least cause them to consider the marketplace and see how they can improve their team.
Okay, so the Lightning did pay those two first-rounders for Bjorkstrand and Gourde, who could have worked with a multitude of teams, maybe even the Leafs. But, you know, a lot of people are thinking that this was a heavy, heavy price. It was a heavy, heavy price, maybe too heavy, but I guess I'll throw it this way. Frank or Fiction, acquisition cost is irrelevant to the Tampa Bay Lightning.
I would love to be a car salesman or I'm trying to think of another industry and have Julien Brisebois walk in the door and tell me that he likes something that I have. Because
like a watch salesman, like a jewelry salesman.
Yes, something. I mean, it would have to be like talking a pit bull off of a meat wagon because he is so focused and honed in on what he wants and he goes out to get it regardless of whatever the price paid is. Now, I would agree with you and think that it's a significant price. And maybe if we're talking about paws, you know, if you're the Leafs, as tough as this situation might be, and you're watching your core in its absolute prime, you go, well, there's only so many years that the Tampa Bay Lightning can hang around like this. They don't have a first round pick until 2028. Maybe we just wait them out. And I say that facetiously, but look, it's a lot. Two firsts and a second. And yeah, of course you have Bjorkstrand on a deal that is not a rental. And you are hopeful and optimistic that you can re-sign Gord, who knows your organization so well. But Yanni Gord is a guy whose game has taken a step back this year. As much as I like him as an addition, he's not the Yanni Gord we knew from 4 years ago when the Tampa Bay Lightning were hoisting the Stanley Cup for a second straight year. And Bjorkstrand is inconsistent. So, look, I get where they're at, and it's hard to argue with Julien Brisebois' track record. There's some really good ones. Hagel, Paul, Coleman, Goodrow. Every now and again, you're going to mix in a turd, and that's what they had with the Tanner Jeannot deal. It's a fact of life. Like you're not going to be successful and bat 1,000 as an NHL GM. First, second, third, fourth, and fifth round pick for Jeannot, who does not play in the organization any longer. Nonetheless, I can't argue with his success and track record.
No, it's hard to, and really, you know, they get the opportunity because they've won to push it in, and they continue to go after it because they want to add another Stanley Cup to the ledger. Frank or fiction, then, with the Lightning, does this take them out of any possibility of getting Alex Tuch?
I believe it does. They're capped out. They're obviously out of assets for the most part. Tuch would require probably a decent roster player off of their team, and I'm not entirely certain or sold that Tampa wants to do that, especially with how well they've played of late. So I would say that for the most part, Tampa went from being the most aggressive team on my ranking to now one of the least.
All right. Let's focus a little bit on the Leafs as well, because you had it in your trade or your latest write-up, and those picks are kind of not going to work out for the Leafs. So should they should the Leafs call on the Flyers for Lawton and Ristolainen? Frank or fiction?
I would say fiction. First off, I'm not a Rasmus Ristolainen believer. I understand that his game's gotten better and there's been a ton of, let's call it pump around that. Recently, John Tortorella has been singing his praises. The numbers and metrics and eye tests would all indicate that he's played better, but I can't think of Rasmus Ristolainen ever going to a new team and drastically improving it. And that, plus the fact that he's never played in a Stanley Cup playoff game, I'm going to pass with the term remaining on his deal. And I really like Scott Laughton. He is a beloved player, a fantastic teammate. He would love to come to Toronto. He still has a place there, and it would be a seamless fit. But if I'm the Leafs, I'm shooting for a bigger target than Scott Laughton. He's a check down option on my list, and I'm going to try and tackle something bigger because I think this team is in a spot that they need it.
Frank or fiction, this I guess could apply to the Leafs, but just in general, as you're, you know, discussing matters with teams and players and agents and so on, are futures generally clutched too tightly? Just in general in the NHL, is that Frank or is that fiction?
Well, I'd like to say that it's Frank because I think the numbers would bear that out. Like I was talking to a GM yesterday who reminded me that a third round pick has an 11% chance to play in the NHL, period. And we're not talking about an impact player. We're talking about 11% chance to play one game. So I would say for the most part, yes. But the problem with that is there's so many teams that do value it. Like you see these returns and they go, look how many first round picks we have. And it's like, well, what are they going to turn into is the real question. And if you're planning on taking the Vancouver path and packaging them to get something else immediately, then sure. But if the plan is we're going to pick someone and it's going to take 5 years for that number 26 overall pick to get somewhere or something to even learn enough about him to make a judgment one way or the other, I'd say yeah, that's kind of tough.
I just want to go back to our conversation just there on Scott Laughton and the Leafs. You said you'd be searching for something bigger than Scott Laughton. So who should the Leafs be looking for?
Well, I think the first and most important thing that the Leafs are looking for is a center. And I had felt all along that perhaps Brock Nelson is a guy that is, that sounds funny to say, but too high end for what the Leafs are looking for, meaning the cost is going to be significantly more than what they want to pay for a rental. That said, I don't know that it's necessarily prudent, as much as I'm sure they're sitting back considering the price paid for Yanni Gourde and saying, well, man, at this point, should we just push in for Braden Schenn? And they may ultimately come to that decision for a number of different reasons. One, you could probably get St. Louis to retain. Two, the relationship and connection to Craig Berube and the trust, I think all very important. Plus, really the different style of game and element that Braden Schenn would bring. I just think, again, Scott Laughton, great player, important player, but you just, if you're the Leafs, you need more. And so I'd be thinking about a higher end guy, but with that, you have to weigh the cost.
We are playing Frank or Fiction with Frank Saravelli of dailyfaceoff.com. Some rant and discussion starting to percolate here. So I'll give you sort of a question, then a Frank or Fiction. What is the latest in your understanding with the handling of Mikko Rantanen for Carolina? And Frank or Fiction, trading Rantanen would effectively be waving the white flag for the Hurricanes.
Fiction on the Hurricanes waving the white flag, and Frank that they have been doing investigation on what the market would look like.
A Frank and Fiction. I like that.
Ooh. But here's the other thing I would add. How odd would it be if the Carolina Hurricanes are weighing this decision and what to do, knowing that they've gotten a non-committal answer from Mikko Rantanen, and just saying, yeah, you know what? We're going to keep him, but we don't know what the market looks like. Or we're going to trade him, and we don't know what the market looks like. They haven't made their decision yet. They're working their way through that process. And the way you do that is by gathering as much intel as possible. So they have been canvassing, and I can tell you this for fact, or Frank, I should say, that they've been talking to agents. I think they've been talking to former managers. Whoever it might be, any sort of executive that they could get an opinion from or trust, they want to know, what would you do in our situation? And it's not to say that they don't know what to do, not by any stretch. They're looking for the best ideas possible, and they're turning over every rock to go out and do that. So does this mean that because they're talking to and canvassing to understand what the marketplace looks like for Rantanen, that they're going to move him? The answer to that is no. I still believe that it's more likely than not that Mikko Rantanen stays put in Carolina because they are willing and ready to roll the dice, see if they can go on a deep cup run, and then at some point over this four-month runway that they have, try and convince him to remain a Carolina Hurricane. And the other part of perusing that market is that every other team would be in the same exact position that the Canes are now, which is, man, should we really give up a lot for a guy that we're very unlikely to get a commitment from because he's going to want to see what the total market looks like in late June?
I saw that you had the LA Kings as a nice connection, if that were to happen, on your latest article in Daily Faceoff. So maybe there's something in the air there. I want to ask you about the Oilers and Trent Frederick. When I saw that, I was like, oh, he's like Kane Light or Kane Medium. Like, he's an Evander Kane-esque guy. Is there, Frank or Fiction, is there anything behind the Frederick ad that is related to Evander Kane?
Fiction. No, there's nothing, at least to my knowledge. Mm-hmm. He's not a replacement for Kane. They don't appear eager to trade Kane because they'd have to attach an asset to do it. No one's willing to do them any favors and bail them out of the conundrum that they're in. And more than that, I think that would be a significant dose of recency bias for the Oilers. As much as this Kane situation is imperfect, you're forgetting that 2 years ago in the playoffs, he was such an impact part of their run and could still get there and be that if and when he's healthy. So I think the Oilers are trying to manage this as best they can. It's an uncomfortable position to be in. They got a different element in Frederick who brings some size and obviously a little bit of grit as well. Mm-hmm. And an 18 goal, 40 point season under his belt. He's a different look and that's good, but they did that while also not boxing themselves out of other opportunities, which involve potentially spending Kane's money, or if they don't, that they could actually still go out and get another either league minimum player without retainment or another Trent Frederick-sized player cap-wise with a double dose of retainment.
What's the crux of the issue with Kane?
Trust, if I could boil it down to one word. And it's not a you're a wild card and we don't trust you so much as it is trust in a lot of things. Doctors' opinions, medical experts, Kane himself in terms of his how he's feeling. And this is a guy that, let's just put yourself in the Oilers' shoes. Let's say you go out and spend that money. There's no recourse to this if Kane wakes up on March 27th, 20 days after the deadline, and says, hey, you know what? I feel like $5.1 million today, and I want to play. And then he gets an opinion from a doctor that clears him to play. There's nothing you can do. You have to, you are forced to by the CBA to activate him. And so if you just went out and spent that money, well, that means that you are then forced to trade the commensurate amount of that money off of your cap post deadline with multiple first round picks to dig yourself out of hell to do it. And I just don't think the Oilers are ready and willing to take that risk. Had this been someone else, maybe, but when it's a guy that's been jettisoned from Winnipeg, Buffalo, and San Jose, I think you lose the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, it sounds like to me there's a player who doesn't want to play ball, who's in a pretty good situation to potentially win a Stanley Cup and is making life miserable on the organization.
Well, let me say this. It's not necessarily about playing ball, because you could play ball now, but it doesn't mean you're going to keep playing ball. And that's the trouble, is you might get his word now that, hey, I am going to be out for the rest of the year. And by the way, if anyone's listening to this, that is cap circumvention.
Yeah.
But if that's the case, how do you know that that's going to continue to be his stance all the way up to and including through the end of the regular season, which, by the way, this year isn't until April 17th.
Yeah, it's interesting because generally we don't have these discussions when there's like, oh, you know, could he be ready? Yeah, maybe it'll take him right to playoff night one. And usually it takes guys right to playoff night one. And I'm not saying that, you know, this is like rampant, that it's always happening. But this seems to be going one way, whereas most of the times it goes the other way. It's interesting to go ahead.
I would just say generally we're not dealing with a guy, again, who has been jettisoned from three different teams, presented a fake vaccine card, didn't make a team meeting, had a contract terminated. Like, go through the list of questionable decisions made. The Oilers don't want to find themselves on the wrong end of another one just because someone woke up one day and decided to get out of bed and feel different.
So in summation, the Oilers, like many teams previously, have an Evander Kane issue.
Well, why do you think there's been talk about Evander Kane submitting a no trade list on March 1st? It wasn't,
he's not playing ball.
It was for that exact reason of, hey, what do we do here in this situation? It's just that I'm saying the quiet part out loud.
Okay. Frank or fiction, let's get back on track here. To make a move over the next 48 hours, the Dallas Stars are the team that's best positioned.
That is fiction. On the rental market, that might be Frank. I still think the best team positioned to make any move, anything happen, short-term, long-term, rental, whatever it is the Utah Hockey Club. They've got the most picks and prospects. They've got the most cap space. And they're a team that, for my money, I would be looking long and hard on the betting market of what are the odds for Utah Hockey Club to get in the playoffs. They've played like a different team since Sean Durzi's been back. They're fully healthy, and they're motivated to get in there and capture the attention of their market in year one. I'm not saying they're absolutely going to pull it off. They've got a ton of work to do, but there's a reason why they were kind of, you know, in the middle of the pack in teams in terms of team aggression on my list. Don't sleep on Utah Hockey Club.
+420 to make the playoffs.
I thought it would be better than that, to be honest.
It's moved a little bit. You know, I saw, I think our all mutual friend, Johnny Lazarus, tweeted yesterday that the Devils were plus 1,000 to not make the playoffs. And then I think a bunch of people bet it. Now it's only plus 320.
And they lost Jack Hughes.
And they lost Jack Hughes. So it was a good time. Anyway, Frank or Fiction, the Islanders still haven't decided what they're doing.
I think that's Frank.
Nice. I like when I get a Frank.
It's so hard to decipher. As you know, I put the Islanders in the category of only God and Lou.
No, yeah, that was one of my favorites.
And they're just like, they've got the vault there. And I want to just be super straightforward in telling you that anyone that tells you that they know what the New York Islanders are doing is straight up lying to your face. That said, I think there's a bit of pause. Like, they're still only 3 points out of a spot. And as much as I've been super consistent in what my view of the New York Islanders is, and if they don't trade Brock Nelson and Kyle Palmieri before Friday at 3 Eastern, that they are, it's malfeasance and negligence. But it doesn't really matter what I think. That's not what anyone wants to know. It's what I know. And I don't know that they have fully gone all in on the trade market yet, because I haven't heard enough teams talking about it.
All right. Well, Frank or Fiction, you're excited for Friday at 4 p.m. to put your feet up and have a cold one.
Frank, times a million.
All right.
I say this all the time. I'm kind of like a fat guy on a scooter going downhill with one wheel.
Oh, wow.
Just trying to make it to the finish line.
Okay, well, you're almost there, Frank. We enjoyed the latest edition of Frank or Fiction with our intro music, which we will continue to
work. We'll refine.
We'll refine.
By the way, glad to see the moose in the background now.
Oh, very I didn't see it.
I kept him. I figured, you know what? You lose a bet, you're going to have to pay a price for a little while.
So
we'll see how long. We'll see how long he hangs there, but he's lurking.
He's lurking.
Oh, I see him there.
Yeah.
He's cute.
It's a good addition.
Oh, very nice. Okay, Frank. Well, enjoy the next couple days. We can't wait to catch up next week.
See you guys.
Thanks so much. That's Frank Saravelli, president of Hockey Honda at Daily Faceoff. And our moose.
Our moose lives on
forever.
Yeah,
that's really sweet.
Warms your heart, eh?
It is really
some interesting
nice
things there. I think the Rantanen thing is maybe the most interesting, that it's like they're just going for this. Like, just spamming opinion and being like, what would you do in our situation? I think that's, I don't know. I guess it's a good idea in some ways to have information and to solicit mm-hmm opinion. I think that's good, but it's also basically admitting we don't know what to do here. Like, I,
but it's a pretty unprecedented situation. Like, that's the thing. You can't look, oh, last trade deadline, the same thing happened.
No, it's unprecedented because they're making it unprecedented. Like, it wouldn't be the first Stanley Cup contender to get a high price rental and gamble a little bit. Like, I feel like they should know how to deal with this, and they should just pick a lane. We're going to try to compete for a Stanley Cup because that's how you're positioned right now. Mm-hmm. And if we lose Rantanen, that sucks. But if he sticks around because we showed him the merit of our city and our organization, then we win. Like, I just don't think this is that difficult. I don't know why they need so many opinions on the matter.
My opinion on the Julian Brisebois tweet or quote is that it's one of the best. This was after the trade today, which where they acquired Yanni Gourde and Oliver Bjorkstrand for a couple first round picks, etc. He goes, quote, "I'd rather have a lineup full of good players than a bank of a ton of draft picks, because I think ultimately what we're trying to do here is win hockey games." That's the all-in approach right there.
Yeah, I love it. And when you look at their roster, like, there was clearly room to improve.
Oh,
like, I know they're having a good year. They could win the Atlantic Division. There's a lot to be excited about. Vasilevsky, fine form. You know, Victor Hedman, they got a top line that most teams would be jealous and envious mm-hmm of. But there was areas to improve. Like, they needed two middle mm-hmm six forwards, and they got them. I don't know if Gord's the guy anymore. You know, it didn't really go well in Seattle. Bjorkstrand has a lot to prove on the big stage. Is he a guy that's going to elevate when it matters most and when it's harder and heavier? I'm not really sure. But the Lightning have the look more now on paper as a team that can do some damage as opposed to what it was yesterday.
Looking at their future first round, or their last little stretch of first round picks, this is also a team that, you know, when you're in the window and you're winning, you don't get a lot of assets. So Tampa's first round picks, 2018, none. 2019, Nolan Foote, who they drafted 27th overall. 2020, none. 2021, none. 2022, Isaac Howard, 31st overall. 2023, none. 2024, none. 2025, none. 2026, none. 2027, none. Woo! That's all in. That is choop, all
they
in.
Need, they don't need the picks. They don't need the picks. It also helps when you can just go into free agency and get Jake Guentzel.
Well, I mean, like, that helps too.
Yeah. You don't need it if you can go out there and actually win sweepstakes. And they win sweepstakes, and they won a lot of trades too.
Okay, let's win some bets. I got some best bets for tonight. Sure. We have on the network after us, Ottawa and Chicago, 7:30 start. We talked about that with our guy Kyle Bukauskas yesterday. And I'm going to go with the Sens puck line tonight. I'm looking at teams that are using this week as a good gut check. I think the Sens definitely want to get into playoffs. They definitely want to make the next couple of days worth investing in if you're the front office. I don't think that one game means that, oh, yeah, we should buy. I think they should buy anyway. But they're playing Chicago, who we know. I just like them at a little value here on the puck line. We got that game at 7:30 on Sportsnet as well.
I'm going off network. Maple Leafs in Vegas to start a three-game road trip through the difficult confines of the southwestern United States, Colorado and Utah next. But, you know, the Leafs haven't been playing well lately, but they still bank points. Mm-hmm. I think this is a tough game. Spend a day in Vegas beforehand. I like the Vegas Golden Knights on the puck line. I will stay on network for a little basketball pick. It's an unofficial pick. But the Oklahoma City Thunder, my squad,
of course,
are taking on the Memphis Grizzlies. And Shea went off. Usually Shea Wednesday night is the 50 piece. Like, you can kind of set your watch to that. But he had it the other day. So now I think there might be more of a spreading the ball around in a high total game. So I don't know, like 20 points, Cason Wallace, 20 points.
All right.
Maybe 40 points for J-Dub. Maybe 20 points, Aaron Wiggins. Just anyone but Shea to score in a high scoring game. There might be some value there.
And Frank brought it up, but the Utah Hockey Club to make the playoffs with some value, plus 420. So
parlay that with Auburn to win the NCAA championship.
We should have parlayed that with LeBron James' first basket yesterday.
No, we would have been absolute losers.
I was very sad about that. The 10th point of the game. But then you raised a good point. He wanted everyone to be in the seats, and I said, bring those points up before the show.
It is possible that we thought about this way more than LeBron actually did.
Yeah, you know, LeBron literally documented that day for years. He was ready for it.
Okay.
Anyway, we were losers yesterday, but we will be winners tonight. Dan Schulman will join us on the other side of the break. We'll get into a little Blue Jays action, some spring training check-ins, because this is happening all at the same time. Maybe an NHL trade will break and we will pivot, but let's just give baseball its moment on the other side of the break. We'll be right back.
Get smarter when you listen to Hockey Talk, the Hockey PDOcast with Dmitry Filipovich. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back on the Fan pregame on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590, The Fan. A little later on, we've got some doubleheader hockey for you. Ottawa and Chicago, as we talked about, 7:30 start a little later there. In Chicago and St. Louis and the Kings, a 10:30 start. Doubleheader basketball, Sportsnet 1, Miami, Cleveland at 7, and OKC and Memphis at 9:30. Regionally, Anaheim and Vancouver on Sportsnet Pacific at 10:30 start there. And then Sportsnet Plus also got that OKC-Memphis game.
Yeah, another busy night. Didn't mention when we were talking about bets, Jaren Jackson Jr. out for the Grizzlies. Defensive Player of the Year candidate. So, again, maybe giving credence to the notion that it could be a high-scoring night for the Thunder.
Okay, it's always a treat when we get to hear from our next guest. Dan Schulman, voice of the Blue Jays on Sportsnet, joins us. Dan, happy return to spring and baseball season. It's good to have you on.
It's good to see you guys. I can see just the tiniest bit of my front lawn today. So I know it's finally starting to melt. So I think we're headed in the right direction.
That is beautiful. Was your son helping shovel, or what's his deal?
None of my sons were helping shovel. None of them.
Put them on blast, Dan.
I've had plenty of sons and not one of them helped. So I will tell you, a couple of weeks ago, and this is not where anybody wants me to be, I was up on the roof with like a hammer and a screwdriver trying to get ice off the roof. And this is not a good idea for anybody. Eventually, common sense prevailed and we found a professional to do it. But this I always look forward to spring and baseball and better weather, but I think after that storm a couple of weeks ago, you had more than usual.
I think roofs should be off limits for Dan Shulman.
Yeah, we can't have you on a roof.
For the Toronto Blue Jays.
We've got interns here, Dan. We'll get one up there on the roof.
Yeah, we'll get
one. I'll remember that for next year.
Yeah, we'll make sure that doesn't happen again. Okay, so the throes of spring training now. Obviously, the single most important development over the last couple of weeks was, you know, Vladdy's self-imposed deadline expiring without a deal. But in terms of notable things that have happened or developed over the course of a couple days here and weeks of spring training, like, what's top of mind for you?
I think top of mind is Max Scherzer has looked really good in both of his starts. And I was down in Dunedin for a few days last week. I'm bouncing back and forth with basketball now, but had a chance to speak with Max, and he was very clear. He says, if I'm healthy, I still think I can pitch at a very high level. And he's looked very good in his two starts. I thought that was very important. Kevin Gausman today, I thought was very encouraging. His first outing, they're bringing him along a little bit more slowly. But you guys remember the shoulder issue that he had in the spring last year and what a grind the beginning of the season was for him. A healthy Kevin Gausman, and he touched 96 today. That's very good. Alan Roden is very good. He homered again today. I don't know if there's any chance he makes the team. I would imagine he's going to start at Buffalo, but he's making it interesting, and he's still got 2-3 weeks to play with here in the spring. So I think that's good. And maybe the most important thing of all is Bo Bichette looks really good. You know, we forget, but you know, with the injuries he had last year and the fact that he just never got it going with the bat in the 81 games in which he did play last year, you know, a healthy 2023 two or one version of Bo Bichette, you know, hitting 290, driving in 90 runs, 35 doubles, 20 homers. That goes a long way to helping this team as well. So I think those are some of the positive developments. On the negative side, I'm a little worried about starting pitching depth. They've got their five. There's no question there, but they've had some injuries behind them. And then Jake Bloss was hit hard again today. And I think, again, they're thin in terms of starting pitching depth, but hopefully that's not something they really need to find out about if their five regular guys can stay healthy.
Okay, a lot of directions to go off that, but it is Bo Bichette's birthday, so that's one direction. Happy birthday, right. Bo Bichette. He gets a shout-out from all of us. I want to go to the Max Scherzer of it all, because that was one of the first things that you mentioned, and I've been very excited to kind of get your perspective on him, just what he's bringing to that rotation, to the young guys that get an opportunity to learn from him, watching him. The first opportunity I had at spring training, it was like one of the first times I was so excited to watch, no offense, a spring training game, but like dialed in, it was like 1 o'clock start, and like, okay, this is happening. He's so intimidating on the mound. It's such a, and like a presence. So what's it like having him helping out some of the younger talent, getting to watch him work, because this is a guy that will be in the Hall of Fame quite soon.
Yeah, I think it's great. It's still, it feels a little bit strange seeing him in a Blue Jay uniform. I never in a million years thought that he would sign with the Blue Jays in the offseason. But I think they needed the arm. And again, if he's healthy, I think he is capable. And he certainly thinks he's capable of pitching at a high level. I think it helps everybody. He and Bassett are good buddies. They'll be talking all the time. You know, Gausman will be in on it as well. Barrios, too. I think it could really help Bowden Francis. After that, you know, Francis at 28 is the, you know, the young pup of the rotation. But if you're Bowden Francis, you soaked up so much from the likes of Gausman and Bassett last year. And now you got Max Scherzer probably a couple of lockers down from you in the clubhouse willing to share information all the time as well. I think it'll help relievers. It might even help the hitters, you know, because Max will say, hey, when I pitched to you, I saw that, you know, that sort of thing. Now, ultimately, the most important thing is that he goes out and he does well on the mound. But when you've got a guy with that much experience and with that kind of intensity and work ethic and determination and all that, it can't hurt. It can only help and rub off on other people.
Scherzer said he was seduced, and I'm paraphrasing, by the all-in nature of the Blue Jays. The last dance trope gets used too often now that we've seen the last dance during COVID. But does it feel like you can feel that when it is that, right? Like the Leafs have kind of experienced that a little bit. There's been a lot of teams over the course of the last couple of years that have had that last dance vibe. Does it feel like that at all with the Blue Jays, or is that, you know, kind of conflating two things?
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I don't know if I would, like, last dance, they had won a bunch of titles. So, you know, like, I think I would use, how about if we talk about pushing all their chips into the middle of the table or something like that? That's clearly what ownership did. I mean, they're spending tens of millions more than they've ever spent before. And I think it's no coincidence that Guerrero and Bichette are in the last year of their deal. So to me, this does look like an all-in kind of year. Who knows if they're good enough, right? I mean, they only won 74 games last year. They're in the toughest division in baseball. They're going to have to be considerably better than they were last year in order to contend for a wild card spot, never mind winning a division. I think they are better. You look at what they've brought in. Santander, 44 homers. They need the pop. Scherzer should help. Jimenez should help. I think Jeff Hoffman is a terrific pickup. But then again, you lose Jordan Romano. But last year, Romano wasn't Romano because he was hurt for at least more than half of the season. I think they've pushed their chips into the middle of the table. And I think late July is going to be very interesting. If they're in the race, they kind of have to go for it, right? Given what they've done so far. And if they're not in the race, we're going to be talking about a whole slew of trades at the end of July. Like, I mean, it might make last year look like child's play, you know, compared to what they would do this year. And it's just the economics of the game. It's just the business of baseball. One other quick little thing, the schedule, and this is not making an excuse for them. Everybody in the American League East will play the exact same schedule, but some months are harder, some months are easier. In April, you can just look at it. It's a bunch of Red Sox and Orioles and Yankees and Astros and Braves. And April, on paper, is their toughest month. They cannot bury themselves. They just can't. They've got to come out and play well and keep their heads above water to have a chance. A lot of things have to go right. A lot of guys have to play well. But certainly it is set up as a go for it year. And then if it works out, great. And if it doesn't, all kinds of trades at the end of July.
We're talking to the voice of the Toronto Blue Jays on Sportsnet, Dan Schulman. So Vladdy sets the deadline for a variety of reasons, but one of the reasons was he doesn't want it to be a distraction. You know, you've been around spring training, you've been in Dunedin, you know, around spring training, around these guys. Like, is that true? Is it not a distraction? Are these guys just going about their business as it, you know, there wasn't this monumental thing that happened in the history of the Toronto Blue Jays, and that everyone's just
like
moving
monumentous.
On.
And monumentous sounds even bigger than monumental.
I think it needs to be slightly bigger than monumental, and it is. Is everything cool in terms of just like the vibe around the Blue Jays, given that this is a big thing and could be distracting?
Yeah. So I was down there for 3 days, and if you didn't know, you wouldn't know. Not one word. Now, I didn't go up to anybody and say, is this a distraction? But I talked to Vladdy and talked to just about everybody who was in that room and coaches. And if you didn't know, you wouldn't know. So I think Vladdy is wired in such a way that it won't distract him. You know, like what's the worst case scenario for Vladdy? He's going to do just fine, no matter how this goes. And again, I know it's a much different situation, but Bichette's in the last year of his deal as well. But that doesn't get nearly the, you know, the amount of conversation that Vladdy does for obvious reasons, given the injuries Bichette had last year and the season that Vladdy had. But to answer your question, Justin, I don't think it will be. You know where I hear it? And I was watching, I don't know if you guys were watching today, it was the Pirates telecast because it was a road game, and they talked about it. And like visiting media will talk about it incessantly. Maybe incessantly is a little bit strong. But the
every
first
new city,
time
though,
Vladdy
yeah.
comes up in every
yeah.
series against the Blue Jays, I bet you that, you know, the broadcasters or the writers on the other team, it'll be a story. And it's understandable because a bunch of those teams are like, gee, we could fit him in. We could make room for that guy in our organization. So I think it'll be
not
more
the
of an issue with, pardon me?
Not the Pirates.
Not the Pirates. No. That's true. I think we can eliminate some teams and they'd be on the list. But, you know, when the Jays go to Boston, when the Jays go to New York, when the Jays play the Mets, they're going to play both teams in New York. Whatever, Angels, Rangers, Phillies, Cubs, you get it. So I think it'll be a bigger story in the U.S. national media and in some of the local markets than it is here. I hope so. I mean, the best case scenario is he and Bichette are the two most motivated guys in baseball. They both have incredible years. You know, I know it's a valid question and it's a huge, huge, huge story. But you got to play the games. And I think once the season starts, the focus should be on the games.
I'm all about the motivation station for both of those guys having great years and then maybe staying as Blue Jays. We'll get to that down the road. I want to ask about Alejandro Kirk, though, because this is like going to be a big year for him as well. I know not on the scale of Vlad and Bo, but he'll be handling the bulk of the catcher role for maybe the first time ever with no Danny Jansen. Like, how is he set up for this and how's he look so far for the beginning of spring training?
Hit a bomb today. It went out to straightaway center today. You know, you guys have probably heard and talked about that he spent most, if not all, of the offseason in the area in Florida, was at the complex a lot. He does look like he's in a little bit better shape to me, which is great. He's going to catch more games than he's ever caught. The last 3 years, it was always in the 70s or 80s. And it sounds like all going well, it could be 110 or 115. This year, they'll be careful, you know, day games after night games. I don't know if they'll DH him much, which they've done in the past. You want to make sure, like, no catcher catches 140 games anymore. It just doesn't happen. So he's not unique in this regard, but you want to make sure you take care of him. But it's a great question, Ailish, because he's become, and he's always been important, but, it, you know, if we started ranking players by their importance, Guerrero and Bichette might be 1-2, and then you could throw some of the starting pitchers in there. You get to Kirk pretty soon. Because behind him are Tyler Heineman and Christian Bethencourt and Ali Sanchez. And these are all guys who have some major league experience, but they're not Danny Jansen. And they shouldn't be expected to, you know, share the job. They're guys who have been backup catchers in their career. And that can be a very valuable spot. But a lot of this is falling on Kirk. From everything I have seen and heard and read, he has looked great, and he's another one of those. If this team is going to do well, they need some positive outcomes. He was great in the second. If you look after the Jansen trade the last 2 months, his numbers shot up. I don't know why. I don't know if that's coincidence or not, but he hit really well in the last 2 months, almost to the level that he hit in his good year, which was 22, I believe, in the first three, 4 months of 22. They need him to be good. Can he be a 750 OPS guy instead of a 670 OPS guy? That'll help them win some more games. So it's a great question because he is a very, very important guy. Like if Kirk gets hurt, they've got an issue. If Gausman or any one of the main starters gets hurt, obviously Bichette or Guerrero, that Kirk's in that inner circle of guys who, if they get hurt, they've got a problem. So it is a big, big year for him. And he looks well set up from what we've seen so far to thrive.
It could be our last chance to talk college hoops with you, so let's spend a minute, Dan. Cooper Flagg, looks like he's going to win National Player of the Year. I guess Jahni Broome has an opportunity, but Cooper Flagg's been the story of college hoops this year. I'm sure you've done quite a few of his games. What's been, like, most awe-inspiring about his freshman season with the Blue Devils?
He is great, and I'll have him one more time. I've got them Saturday against North Carolina, which will be a lot of fun, but he is a special talent, and I was on a plane a couple of months ago when a guy knew who I was, and he goes, can I ask you a question? I said, sure. He goes, do you think Cooper Flagg's overrated? And I said, can I ask you a question? And he goes, yeah. And I said, do you hate Duke? And he goes, yeah, I do. Said, I thought so. Because there's nothing to hate on this kid, and he's 18, so I feel okay calling him a kid. There's nothing to hate on this kid. He's fantastic. He is, his competitiveness and his energy and his ability to impact the game in multiple ways are second to none in college basketball. His three-point shooting's gotten a lot better. He can get to the rim. He can post up. He can take you off the dribble. And he's a tremendous defensive player. I mean, he impacts the game defensively in so many ways. I think he's great. And whether it's the Raptors or anybody else, whoever gets him, and he will be the number one overall pick.
It's the Raptors, Dan.
Yeah, I know. I know, me too. You want to talk about positionless basketball if you put him in with the group they're putting together. But he's great, and he's a really, really good kid, and he's a great – everything I hear is great teammate and selfless and terrific guy to coach and all that. And I'd give him a slight leg up over Jahni Broome for National Player of the Year the way it's going. I mean, Flagg is getting better and better and better. I had the game against Notre Dame in January, I guess, where he scored 42 points. And it was on 14 field goal attempts. He was something like 12 for 14, and a bunch of them were threes, and he got to the line a ton. He's great. And if you take away one thing from him, he'll find another way to try to beat you. And I think he's going to have a very special career in the NBA.
So you got Flagg and Broome, and you got Duke and Auburn. Is it too simplistic to suggest that the two players of the year will meet for the title in a couple weeks here?
Well, they call it March Madness for a reason. So, you know, it's anything can happen. I mean, I think Houston is great. Alabama's the kind of team, if they shoot threes like crazy, if they drop 15 of them on you, how are you going to beat them? Florida, Tennessee, there are some really good teams. I'm a little worried about Auburn, and I just saw them. I just had them last week, and they had a convincing win at Kentucky. But Jahni Broome twice in the last week has aggravated a shoulder injury. He's come out of the game. He's gone back in. He's played, but he hasn't quite looked like himself. They actually lost to Texas A&M last night by 11 points. So I'm a little worried about Auburn. But if they're healthy, and Duke's not totally healthy right now either, although Proctor is back, they're missing Malik Brown, who's an important player for them as well. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody healthy and everybody plays well, those are the two best teams. But I think Houston, Alabama, Florida maybe, those are also teams that could figure into it. But Duke and Auburn played already this year. Duke won, I think, by six at Duke. But that was December the 4th or something like that, which in college basketball terms is a lifetime ago. It would be pretty cool if they met again for the national championship.
You can see Justin and I was giving Justin a look because he's all in on Auburn. He's like parlaying Auburn with what day the patios are going to open anything. In Toronto. Yeah. Like anything you could parlay Auburn with on a betting app. So I'm like, okay, I'll do it too. And then you were giving us second thought about Auburn. So we might need to ride
December 4th, a lifetime ago.
But they're not healthy. He's hurting his shoulder.
Yeah, but 3 weeks will be a lifetime as well when we get started here. They're going to get a couple layups to start, likely as a one seed. They're going to be able to cruise to the second weekend. I think everyone will get healthy and we'll get it sorted.
I would like that. You know what? You want to see best on best. And if they get knocked out in the quarters or semis of the SEC tournament, that's not the worst thing. It means an extra day or two of rest. It won't impact their seed. They're going to be a one seed. They're likely to be the number one overall seed, regardless of what happens. And you know, Justin, I've had them six or seven times against tons of good teams. And you want to talk, like I talked about how Cooper Flagg can beat you in a bunch of different ways. Auburn as a team can beat you in a bunch of different ways. They can beat you in the 60s. They can beat you in the 90s. They can beat you inside or outside, offense or defense. Bruce Pearl is one of the best coaches in America. And if Broome is healthy, Auburn-Duke would be a special, special game, I think.
Still hoping for my Dartmouth Big Green to get into the big dance. What do you think, Dan?
I don't know. I haven't followed the Ivy that closely.
Oh, they're going to be playing Harvard this weekend. They're in the Ivy League finals or whatever they call that. It's not worth tuning into.
The tournament?
All right.
Yeah, it's Ivy tournament. But anyway. Okay, Dan, we took so much of your time. It was really great to see you. Lovely to catch up. And I'm sure we'll be getting to connect a lot as the season begins. Thanks so much.
Absolutely, guys. Thanks.
That's Dan Schulman, voice of the Blue Jays on SportsCenter at College Hoops, of course. How do you feel about Auburn?
I feel good.
Justin,
not good
my
that they
parlays
lost
are looking
Here's the difference between Auburn
nervous.
And Duke and why I like Auburn. Duke plays in a conference where there are absolutely no good teams. Basically, every team that he mentioned other than Auburn and Duke plays in the SEC in Auburn's conference. So Auburn has to go through it. Every time they play, they're playing a good team. They're becoming more tried and true, more bulletproof than Duke, who first time they see someone, and they've played Auburn already, but first time they see something that is greater than Wake Forest, they're going to be in trouble. They don't have to deal with Alabama or Tennessee or Florida on a regular basis like Auburn. That's the difference.
Okay, well, we'll have to wait and see. The bets have been placed. A couple things before we wrap. Do you want to do the World Cup or Ovi? You get to pick one.
World Cup.
World Cup. This is a fun one. It's like almost an A-list.
There's some talk behind the scenes.
We might bring it back. Live a little. So the we know the World Cup's just around the corner, folks. And FIFA announced today that there's going to be a halftime show at the World Cup final for the first time ever. We are part of hosting this World Cup, as we know, Canada, USA, and Mexico. It's going to conclude July 2026 on the 19th at MetLife Stadium. So the FIFA president today said that the Coldplay lead singer, Chris Martin, legend, will help establish a set of artists to perform in the 15-minute break. 15 minutes is real quick. Like, get on, get off, how to do a stage. I don't even know how. Anyway, at next year's final. So we should start thinking about who can be part of a 15-minute halftime show at the FIFA World Cup.
Representing Canada, the United States, and Mexico?
I think you would. Like, if it's the first time ever, you'd want to, throw a bone to Canada, America, and Mexico and have somebody that maybe from each country, or you just go rogue.
If we're all getting along, hopefully
that's true.
We
actually, who knows what's gonna look like by then.
We are hosting together. Actually, I don't like how we're Americanizing the World Cup final because it's gonna be in America. I don't like that. Like, this isn't something
I didn't think they were Americanizing.
This is not what the World Cup does. We don't need a halftime performance.
Especially when it's only 15 minutes. Exactly. There's not enough time.
No, they're going to extend it.
It's going to be 15 minutes.
Are you sure?
I read about it today.
Okay. There's no wiggle room there?
Well, I don't know. I didn't call the FIFA president.
Halftime in a football game in
I understand.
December.
I know. But it has been written in all the articles I read today. It's a 15-minute break.
That's all I'm saying. It's going to be tough.
Yeah, they just got to get someone to sing one song.
Exactly.
Anyway, that was fun.
With roots in Canada, America, and Mexico.
Oh, yeah, yeah. All right, folks. Well, tomorrow will be the night before the trade deadline. Hopefully, we bring you some good stuff tomorrow night.
I'm Frank. There is pressure
Frank.
On the Leafs.
I agree.
After today's move.
All right, everybody. Have a wonderful night, and we will see you on Baby Friday.